All right, so
actually the first part is the part that I should do around the board.
Okay, so the things that we talked about like 2 weeks ago are kind of like the major issues within culture, right, can kind of be summarized into like three questions, if you will, when we talk about culture. Right, the first thing is kind of the fact that usually we're talking about discimamon, right? So we're talking about damage caused by an animal, right, or your property, not right, not the person himself, right, not the government involved. Okay? So usually that's like a reason to be like more meek, right? Or if you will to imagine this, do you guys see this?
No. I'm like kind of, but
yeah, it's usually a reason to be is any better. You guys see this?
Yeah.
Okay. So usually that's a reason to be more meiko, maybe to define it more as like a chiyuv mamon, right? As like a monetary thing. As opposed to, right, at the same time though, it's also a case of resicha. Right? All the cases we've been dealing beforehand were always cases where the person, you cause damage. Right? Here, you cause damage not only to a person, which is different, right? So you have an adam being involved, you hurt a person, and not only that, but you kill the person. Right? So there's clearly something significantly different between these two things. Alright, so the question is a little bit, where does kofar fall on that scale? Alright, that's kind of like the first question a little bit. And like, how are you going to view kofar is going to be determined based on like this, based on this scale, how much who's chayav, you know, that type of aspect. Now I went for tzicha/chavala, because it's, and then chavala symbolizes that it's like damaging a person, and you can't be, you're not choval an object, you're choval a person. Alright, so just make that, you're hitting a person, and you're killing that person, right? So there's something significantly different there. The second question, and they're all related, the three issues, they're kind of mutually exclusive questions in some ways also. The second question is, potentially, like, who is this chiyuv fall on? Is this a chiyuv on the shore, or is this what we call a chiyuv on the bayim? And by that, I mean in a simplest sense, and then, who's the obligation directly on?
Can I go see if there's a better marker in that room?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just don't know my things easier.
Yeah, okay. I'll just.
I should just invest in it.
What?
I should just get a pile of markers. I think I might even have.
Oh, perfect.
I'm so sorry.
We'll stay at our number 10. Two.
Mm-hmm.
You are just left, and you kind of over.
Mm-hmm.
You replaced me.
Yeah.
Never. Oh, good.
Oh, I think it looks better.
Yeah, no, it's a sick one.
I was thinking I should borrow your marker. Okay, so the second question. Right, so the first question that Kelly just mentioned is that like there's three kind of questions in kind of dealing with kofar. And they're kind of like all distinct questions, but they're also overlapped. The first question is, on one hand, we're dealing with nifki mamon, right, where an animal is causing damage, not a person. But on the other hand, we're also dealing with the case of resicha and chavala, where a person was damaged, and not only damaged, but the person was killed. Right, so that will determine how we understand kofar. The second question, where else with that, is that we're talking about, right, on the one hand, you have a chiyuv shor, right, the shor itself is causing damage, and the shor itself, therefore, is responsible, and maybe at the end of the day, the owner pays for the shore's responsibilities, but the shore itself is the one that's responsible. But again, on the other hand, you might have the conception that maybe the owners take a direct responsibility. Maybe in a way that's different than regular nizki mamon, right? The owners are more directly responsible here for having, you know, led to the death of another human being, right? And the third question is this question of, is kofar a chiyuv mamon, and then the payment you're paying, is it a monetary payment, or is it a chiyuv, or is it a chiyuv kapara? Okay, right? Is it defined as a monetary payment, or is it about receiving some type of kapara, right, atonement for your wrongdoing? So I make the point that there's three different things, because I think they don't have to be tied together necessarily. Right? Just give you an example. If it's a chiyuv mamon, right, if it's a monetary, that could be because it's a chiyuv shor, but also even the chiyuv bayim could also be, even if you define the payment to be on the owners, it still could be defined as a monetary payment, right? Likewise, kapara as well could fit all of the different categories, right? So I think it's logical to kind of tie them together as like a basket, like these three things, but you can also like kind of differentiate. Anybody have feeling, different feelings? Disagree?
You explain that. You go first. Can you explain the, I understand all those confusions in the Momo side. Can you explain the, how they could fit in the kapara side?
Oh, okay. So how could they fit in the kapara side? So it could be kapara, and then you could have an obligation to pay kofar, to pay for kapara, even though it's in this case mamon, right? It could still be sort of a financial, something which was not resicha, and yet because you did such damage that's like so severe that you can't actually offset it in some ways, you're still chayav for kapara for that. We could also be finding the chiyuv shor, that the idea of the day, the responsibility comes down to the shor having done something wrong. And yet, nonetheless, right, and the responsibility is on the shore. It's maybe the shore, in some ways, is chayav kapara for what it did. Okay. Which would be a more, I agree that that's like a clear, like weirder svara. Like at the one, how can you ask the shore to kapara? But if you remember, like, well, we'll see. Maybe the part of the chiskuni might be suggesting partly that. I included, but the Ramban seems to suggest some type of level of responsibility that the shore holds. Right, the more you hold that the shore has like responsibility for their actions, the more you may suggest. More shockingly, that shore requires kapara. Maybe the mita of the shore is mechaperet. We'll see maybe in the chiskuni that suggestion. Did that answer your issue?
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys, you see, it makes sense. I'm not trying to really kind of make sense, but at the same time, they're kind of separate. I mean, I spent more time on this, but I kind of just want to use this more of like, we kind of like touched this last time, so I kind of just want to recap and kind of move on to more direct issues. Okay? All right, so now I kind of want to show a little bit some of these issues that we didn't finish off talking about last week, or 2 weeks ago. And that is to show first, like, source of, like, this concept of the difference between chiyuv shor versus chiyuv bailim. So it comes up in two different places. The first is we saw that there's this machloket between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, right? You pay between Dimei Nizak or Dimei Mazik, right? You pay with the value of the, for the value of the person died or the person or the killer, right? Which one is the monetary value, like the amount of money you're paying, how's it determined, right? Did you guys see Rabbeinu Hanana, how he interprets that, what the machloket is based on?
I don't know who's in what, but I'm sure we did it.
We did.
Okay, so it's on the third page, bottom of the third page.
Do
you know what? Yeah, that starting there. That's where we're starting. All right, so Reinecha, I'll start reading, and you guys tell me. Right, so Reinecha says, Tanya tan pidyon nafshod mei nizak, Rabbi Shmuel omer, demei mazik le rabbanan. So rabbanan hold, you hold demei mazik. The amri demei nizak, chayav bala shor bekofer, shearei shoro harag. Rabbi Shmuel, the Amar Demi Mazik, Perish Hamazik, who I chayav mitam, Fish Losham or Shamar, Sharo, Kiluhu Arag, Rahman Hasale, the Shalom Kofar, the Fish Losa, Masabiadaim. Right, so what's he suggesting? Why is it that the Rabban you hold Demi Nizak, and for Rabbi Shmuel you're holding Demi Mazik?
One of them was because the owner didn't like keep his, like, didn't like watch as much, like Losham or Shalom or Sharo, so it's as if he killed.
Right, okay.
And then like, so then it's like he deserves to be killed, so therefore the kapara, like, the money, like, goes to, like, it should be, like, his self, because he's, like, saving himself. That's one of them, right?
Yeah, so according to Rishmael, you're paying based on the value of the aggressor, right, of the responsible party, because it's as if he himself did it. And depending on the holds Demi Nizak, why are you paying according to the value of the deceased? Mm-hmm. Right in the first line?
Because it was just your shore, not you.
Right, because your shore killed it. Right, so I guess because it's the actions of the shore, you're paying based on the value of what the shore damaged. Right? And then Rabbi Chanan is effectively arguing explicitly this explanation that there's a difference between whether you consider the shore being responsible, or whether it's the bailim responsible, right? Who is at the end of the day, like, the culpable party? If it's the shore is responsible, then his argument is that you pay Demi Nizak, right? If it's the bailim, then you're paying Demi Mazik. Right? Why is that significant? Like, why is it that the shore is responsible, you're paying Demi Nizak? And if it's the bailim responsible, then you're paying Demi Mazik?
Significant?
Like, what's like, what's a svar? Like, why is this like a good way of explaining the machloket?
Well, I think you see that one aligns more with mamon cases, another aligns more with flashout. But if you think of you as killing it, then you should be paying for your, like you should be like replacing yourself with.
Right. Exactly.
Replace yourself, and then if you think, or just it's like you're treating it as like a mamon case of like your shor did something, like regular. Zeking, then you would pay the damage, the value of the shore that was.
Right, okay, great, yeah, great. Yeah, it seems to be what he's pointing out to. I just wanted to make it very, like, more obvious, like, why, like, just, like, finish the argument, like, why he thinks he's connecting the two verses. Okay, so that's, like, just one example of that distinction. Okay, one other instance of where we see this type of distinction between the shore, right, the shore being responsible versus the owners, is in the Gemara on, in the fourth, end of the fourth parak. Where the Gemara presents as a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about whether or not nizikin shelo bechavana. Okay, so just basic rules that if a shor damages shelo bechavana, right? So the shor unintentionally kills someone, so it's not chayav mita, right? There's no, it doesn't get punished, doesn't
it
get
intentionally kills someone or damages
intentionally kills. If a shor unintentionally kills, so it does not get skila. Right, the shore itself does not get killed, but you are chayv kofar. Okay, it's like based on drashim psukim. We'll get to it, maybe, hopefully we do this year, like more directly. But so there's machlok. What happens in nizikin?
Wait, say that one more time.
You are if you pay. Let me just write it down. If you are if
we're talking about shelo bechavana, right? So the damage or the killing was done unintentionally, right? The shor caused damage or whatever, killed unintentionally. So if it killed, so skila, not chayav, right? It doesn't get killed. Kofar, you are chayav. That everyone agreed. That's like the agreed facts. The question is, what about nizikin? Right, if the shor causes damage, doesn't kill, just causes damage, shelo bechavana with unintentionally, what happens? Right, so there's a machloket, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon.
This is the Gemara that's like
it's the first four lines.
This
is the next source. Yeah. This is the next source.
Yeah.
Do I read it inside?
No.
Right, so machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Right, if not, I'm not mechadish anything.
You just messed the thing.
What
does it mean?
Yeah, what does it mean like for an animal to do something lobakavana? Like it didn't intentionally
kill or hurt someone, it did it accidentally.
Right, so it's like are we just like
so
baseline like, assumption that like an animal has intention, like yeah.
The Gemara kind of deals with how do you know what the animal's intending in some cases. I mean, first of all, you can usually see like if an animal's like runs at you, it's probably intentional, while if it's like if it happens to hit you while it's like walking on the side, then it might be unintentional. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question, like, how do we really know? But, yeah, we are assuming that there are certainly animals have the ability to intend certain consequences to their actions.
Okay.
Which I don't think is a crazy, I'm not a biologist, but or veterinarian, but I don't think it's a crazy assumption about animals. Either way, that's like the assumption. Okay, so we're talking about Ezekiel Shalom Chavana, what do you do? So Rabbi Shimon says, so it's Machloket, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says you compare nizikin to kofar, right? In which case you'd be chayev, and Rabbi Shimon says you'd compare it to skila, in which case you'd be pater. Right? And the Gemara explains why do we make that comparison? Right? So the Gemara says as follows: why is that comparison true? So Rabbi Yehuda says, this is like the second to last line. Danin tashlumim mitashlumim ve'in danin tashlumim mita. We compare tashlumim to tashlumim. Right? So kofar and nizikin are both kofar and nizikin payments are both types of payments, right? Monetary payments. So we compare the monetary payments, and we don't compare the mita, which is different, as opposed to comparing to the mita, which is different, right? Death is different than types of tashlumim, types of repaying. Okay. Well, Rabbi Shimon says we group differently. Nami leif mikofro. Danin chiyuvei deshor, michiyuvei deshor, lafuki kofar dechiyuvei debalimho. So we compare the chiyuvim deshor, so the chiyuvim deshor, so we compare skila with nizikin to exclude kofar, because kofar is chiyuv of the balim and not chiyuv of the shor. Okay? So on the base of it, right, it seems like, according to Rabbi Shimon, right, kofar is kind of different because it's chiyuvei debalim. Right? So what exactly does that mean?
Right. So what do you guys think that means? What's that distinction mean? What's the argument? Why are we comparing shore to shore with regard to, what makes Kofar different from Skila and Nezikin?
It seems like, I mean, this goes back to the question of, like, when you're doing something to a shore, are you punishing the shore, or are you, like, taking the shore out of the equation as to not have further damage, or are you, like, punishing the Baal ashore in some way that we were talking about earlier, I feel like? You know, like, we talk about the distinction of, like, whether, like, we're, like, focusing on the shore. Am I just making this up?
No, we did talk about that, okay. But how does that relate to this discussion?
I mean, because it seems pretty clear that we're talking about stuff with the shore, and then we're talking about, like, it's clear that Kofar is a chiyuv of the...
How is Kofar a chiyuv of the bottom? Just to explain.
Kofar is a chiyuv in the framework that if we're thinking of Kofar as... something that you're paying in order to, like, make a pidyon for your nefesh, then it's about you. It's not about the shore. So that's weighs more on the people of the body.
Okay, so you're paying, in other words, to, like, save what you would be responsible for. So then it's like, and then in other words, you'd be killed yourself. Right? Kofar is different because in theory it's just like a way of saving yourself because really you should be chayiv. So I then like to reduce that argument a bit. It's like kofar is not, it's not, it's we compare the chivim on the shore versus, and we don't, we separate out the chivim on the baal who chayiv mita.
Sure.
Right, that's effectively what we're arguing. The kofar is effectively a substitute for chivim mita.
Yeah, sure, I guess. Sorry, I'm a little rusty on this because
do you disagree, Nerhel?
No, I think that makes sense. I mean, I think that's also kind of the way that Rabbi Yochanan described it. Like, where, like, you didn't watch your shore. Like, you almost have chiyuv mita. Kofar's paying for that. I think that makes sense.
Okay, so let me show you the following, okay? I think it's a thing to think about this, because look at the way, for instance, Rashi says it, and then this kind of brings back to my point about connecting the three categories, okay? Rashi says as follows: Chiyuv deShor. What does it mean to connect Chiyuv deShor to Chiyuv deShor? Tashlumi nizakov machmat haShor bayin. So the things that we talk about that compare shore to shore are the things that come because the shore did it, right? Your chayiv nezek because the shore caused damage, right? So then, with regard to kofar, right? Logically, what's different about kofar? The shore caused the damage, or the person caused the damage?
Of course, neither. I mean, the shore.
I mean, like, I agree that the person might be, you could argue, maybe more responsible, but, like, certainly the shore is the one to cause the damage itself.
Yeah.
Right? The shore is the one to kill the person.
Yeah.
Right. So Rashi's going to have a hard time explaining what's different about kofar.
This is what I said.
So Rashi says, yeah, exactly what you said. He says that the difference of kofar and baal is kapar nafsho.
Yeah.
So he jumps to suggest that really what it is that, right, if you will, in other words, Rashi is suggesting that these two things are linked together. Right, the only reason you're chayav, right, the only reason you're chayav chiyuv debalim is because it's a chiyuv for kapara. It's a way of, like, paying off your debt, otherwise you'd be chayav mita.
He's no other way of explaining
right.
Chiyuv debalim.
But you could have suggested otherwise, right? Could you have, can you think of another way of thinking of arguing this case? I mean, yours is what you argue, so you might have a hard time. Doing this. Can you think of another way of explaining it that doesn't have to tie kapara necessarily to why it was different between Bilem and what shore is, like what exactly that means?
I mean, isn't it just very simply... Never mind, this is Tishlin and stuff.
Right, so if you think of it in terms of, like, not in terms of the way that Rashi think of it, in terms of, like, very strongly Mahmat Ashur, who's the actual one that, like, does the damage. Right? But if you had a slightly weaker formulation of the Chiyuv deShor, you might be able to just argue that the question here is just, like, who's responsible in terms of, like, who caused this damage to have happened? Who's responsible for allowing this, you know, travesty to happen? So in the cases of Nezikin, right, the animal is the one who caused it to happen. The animal's actions are the ones responsible. Right? We've been talking about. We spent a long time in, like, the whole year talking about how short Tom, right? Really, the shore itself in some ways is responsible for doing it. And maybe the shore itself is the Bailim. Shore itself is the Baal Din, if you will. that you're going to. So in Ezekiel, it's not so far off to say that that'd be true here too, that the shore is responsible. With regard to, as opposed to in Kofar, and sorry, in Mita cases, where there it's the owner somehow is more responsible for having not guarded his shore well enough. Right? Something we brought, talked about in the very beginning of the year, that why are you obligated for Niske Mamun? And why are you obligated for damages caused by your property? Right? So there are two probably best, like two easy solutions. One is to suggest that in some ways your property is an extension of yourself. Right, so really, your property should be responsible, and maybe you're just picking up the slack of what your property's, you know, maybe your property itself should be responsible, but you obviously are the one who's like the bank account at the back, at you know, the bank account is actually gonna have to pay. Versus suggesting that it's not so much that you're kind of the bank account or you're responsible for what your shores do, but rather that you neglected in your hive to pay because you neglected in your obligation, your social obligation, your Torah-based obligation to guard your animals. Right? You are neglecting in your chiv shmirah. Right? So you could suggest that this is actually what the chakir happening here, that according to that the chiv in the shore implies that the shore itself is responsible, is kind of responsible for these actions, while the chiv in the balim, part of kofar, represent the payment of kofar represents the things which are your neglect for shmirah. And you dafka have kofar in cases where your neglect of shmirah is so outrageous that somebody died, right, after this happened multiple times, right? Only then are you chayiv for chayiv shmir, and that's when you get that chayiv debalim at the level. Okay, so I just want to show, that's just like one way of like kind of showing that like you don't have to necessarily take the Rashi's route of connecting chayiv kapar and chayiv debalim one and the same. Does that make sense? Is that clear? Okay. Yeah. You don't get the difference?
No, because like at least in the way that I understood the chiyuv balim is that the chiyuv of shmira.
Yeah. Okay. But that's the I'm saying, but that's not what Rashi's suggesting. Because if it was all Rashi is suggesting, right? If it was Yorah suggested that the reason that your chiyuv of chiyuv of the balim, what makes kofar different? Is because the Baalim are responsible because it's kapara for them, because they otherwise are chayav mita. Right? That's why it's a chayav the Baalim, because they otherwise are chayav mita, and it's their payment to save their life, so to speak. What I suggested otherwise is that it's nothing to do with saving their life. The reason they're chayav is because this is part of the payment, the you may call it a regular monetary payment, that is reflective of a different negligence they did. Right? For one part of the chayav, let's say that's for the skila, that's part of the chiyuv that regards to the shore's wrongdoing itself. The part of the Baalim were negligent in their guarding of the animal, they're you know protecting society from this dangerous animal. That's what the chiyuv kofar is. But it's still a monetary obligation. You don't have to tie what Rashi says and jump to take a chiyuv kapara. Okay, that's what like I just photocopied this like print. Like I added this, like Achron and Garnat mentions like same type of Svara, and points out it doesn't fit with Rashi, but it's just the same idea. Okay, I think the same type of point kind of comes out if you look at the Chizkuni. Okay, do you see this Chizkuni? Because I think this Chizkuni is like a really underplayed, it's really wild.
I think we did, but again,
okay, so this is what the Chizkuni said. So the question he's asking is why do we need to say by a shor muad? The word yisakel. Why do we need to learn? Like, why do we need this? Why do we need this word of yisakel? Why do we need this din that we kill, right? That we stone a shor muad? Since shouldn't we have a kavachomer from a shor tam, right? If a shor tam is chayiv skila, so kavachomer shor muad should also be chayiv. So he says as follows. Why do we need this pasuk? Because ela im lo amarta b'tam shu skila, haynu lefi she'ena mishalim kofar, tomer b'muad shmishalim kofar. Because you could differentiate between a tam and a muad. By a tam animal, right, a tam does not have a chiyuv kofar attached. And therefore, that's why it might have skila. But a muad, which has a chiyuv kofar, maybe it shouldn't have a chiyuv skila. Right? So what he's suggesting, in some ways, is that because in a shor muad you're paying kofar, you could have believed you wouldn't be chiyuv skila.
I thought the kilayim and dirahim would be in a situation, but why would you assume that?
Wait, so that just what's that? So saying you're assuming it's cumulative or how many that's happening here.
I just don't understand why you would think that the car payment, the COBRA payment would...
Right, exactly. So I think that's what's crazy about this,
that's
right?
What I'm saying. If
then once he was crazy about this cheetah, and then he says, just to point out that COBRA, right, means that you don't pay tequila. Right?
You don't pay tequila.
Because the shore is high of COBRA, because the person is high of kofar in this situation, there's no chiyuv tequila, right? The animal does not have get stoned, right? Do you guys see why that's wild? I mean, you already just pointed out, like, it's a...
I think that makes a lot of sense based on like, all the, like, mefarshim and Tanakh that, like, we did, like, in the beginning of the source sheet, where, like, does that not make sense with what we kind of said in the beginning, which is, like, if kofar is like some sort of kapara for this action, like why? Is it not a direct replacement? I guess is my question. Like why is it not? Why is it crazy to say that it's a direct?
Well, let's put it this way. Let's say you took Rashi's approach, we just were talking about now with the Gemara and Daf and Dalet, right? In which case you think that the chiyuv kofar is a chiyuv in the violin because right, it's a type of way of mechaper them what they otherwise should have been killed,
yeah.
Right? So if you think that the chiyuv kofar is a chiyuv in the violin. The chiyuv skila has clearly nothing to do with the owner. It has to do with the shore. The shore is wrongdoing. Right? The shore did something wrong. So why should the fact that the owners are paying kofar change what we do with the shore? The shore is still a killer. Right? The shore is still someone who clearly has proclivity to killing people. Now, a shore tom gets killed. Right? A shore muad, which is a proven killer, all of a sudden should not get killed, even though, just because you're paying kofar.
Is that always the opinion that like the skila is because the ox is a killer? Is it not the opinion that it's like a punishment on the owner ever? Is there never an opinion like that?
I mean, even if it's a punishment on the owner, it'd still be shocking that we don't get rid of this like the menace to society.
I'm saying like if we somehow dissolve the like shore violin distinction for the purpose of this because it doesn't like and take a different route like Barkal was saying is possible. Then we could still actually, like, if we're saying that you're paying kofar, that we're saying that your shor being stoned somehow is a punishment on you, and being killed would also be a punishment on you, kofar is coming to replace you being killed. And so it really is kind of a cumulative darbening situation because you would be killed, and then you would presumably wouldn't have your shor stoned because that's a lesser punishment than being killed. Kofar is coming to replace that, so once you pay kofar, you don't have to do anything else. But that's only if we collapse the distinction between chiyuv shor and chiyuv bali, which I don't know if it's possible. But
right, that's a really interesting suggestion. I don't disagree with the possibility, but I don't... I think that it's just less likely.
I think it's
far-fetched. I think it's much more difficult in explaining what he's clearly thinking about in his Havamina. And then suggest that he really thinks that the chiyuv skila is like only on the owner, and there's no responsibility to the shore, I think is like a very... it's not just about responsibility to the shore, it's also getting rid of like the menace
yeah.
society.
Yeah.
Right? Even if you don't have to take a strong view in like believing the shore is responsible for its actions in whatever way, you still have to like contend with the fact that the shore is pretty a danger, right? And it's repeated danger to society. So why should we be getting rid of that danger? But I contend it's possible. I think that the easier way to suggest understand it is still wild, but I think the easier way is kind of what I was suggesting as an alternative to Rashi, which is to say that maybe kofar is itself right, not a chiyuv bayin. Maybe kofar is also a chiyuv d'shor. Right? So just like to summarize what we did was that what's crazy about the chizkuni is that you assume that kofar is a chiyuv bayin and skila is a chiyuv shor. Right? So you guys suggested that maybe really skila is also a chiyuv bialim, in which case this isn't the problem. Right? In which case it's not crazy that one chiyuv bialim would knock out the other chiyuv bialim based on kimei d'rabbanei. Or what I suggest I think is easier to swallow is that even kofar is a chiyuv shor.
Then why is it greater than skila? Why is it more severe than skila?
If they're both chiyuv shor.
Yeah.
Because it still is like the. A monetary, because the having is because you're paying in some way, you're doing something already.
That's more about you.
What?
That's more about you then.
Well, it's a question of what your, even if it's like the obligation is based on the shor, the point is in the time is that you're still carrying out some type of payment replacement.
So like
you
the
kind
loss
of like stepped in.
It's about the loss that you're incurring by paying COBRA is bigger than the loss that you'd be incurring by just having your shor stoned?
It doesn't say only like in terms of like who is paying the most. I think it's just like because you're already paying. The Torah tells you you're paying kofar.
Yes, you don't have to.
Does you don't have to pay for skila?
So what, like, what underlying principle is that? Is it? You know, is that?
I'm thinking because kofar is like think about it this way, like kofar you're paying. Forgetting the bialim or shor, like the kofar you're paying for the value, if you will, of what you killed, right? You're paying for the. You're paying for the dead person, the nizak, right? So that payment itself could be worth more than like killing the shor.
That's what I was saying.
What you're saying in terms of the bialim, I'm saying even in terms of chiyuvei the shor.
What do you? How are they chiyuvei the shor independent of like people? Like, what do you mean?
I'm saying the shor is responsible.
Yeah.
The shor is responsible for the deity. So all with regard to how you're paying, how you as the owner are paying for the shor responsibility. So you need to pay for the shor responsibility by killing the shor. Or you can pay for the shor responsibility by paying for the repaying the value of the damage it caused.
Which is presumably higher.
Which is Torah is telling you potentially according to this halamina, which is higher. Yeah.
It's still like the we got it.
I don't know if you have to say higher or lower specifically here because you could just say it's like a gzeiras hakatuv the Torah told you to pay kofar even though it might be equal or not higher.
And then what about the danger to society issue?
That'd be part of the chiddush.
Okay.
But I can agree that they're both like. Either way, it's wild. I don't deny. I just want to show. I wanted to show that this might be a way of like kind of like showing that these two like whether we talk about kofar and skila, whether chiyuv ba'alim chiyuv shor, whether it's like nizki mamon or tzicha, these kind of categories are like conflated, but they don't necessarily have to be, and not everyone does conflate them. Okay. Good. So let's move on to the next question, which is, there's one more point, kind of like makes this point interesting. Okay, the Gemara, right, the Gemara's language, right, throughout, our version, both in Bava Kamma as well as in Makos, the Gemara talks about it, if Natan Pidyon Nafsho, Dmei Nizak, and, or is it Dmei Mazik, right? Translated, is it the damagee or the damager? So the Ritva, if you guys saw this in Makot, he picks up on the fact that the Gemara is using the word damager and damagee instead of the language of the deceased, right? The dead, the murdered, right? So what does he say? This is the bottom of page 4. Ritva says, "Matam pidyon nafsho d'mei nizak perish af agav deharukhu." Even though he's killed, he's been murdered. Karile nizak, he's called nizak. Mishum tokol heicha delo mechay velimita ela mamon nizak karile. Right, why is he called Nizak?
Because they're not demanding the damager's death over it.
Right, because you're not calling for his death, you're only calling for Mamon. Right? In which case, right, what is this Ritva suggesting in some ways? Like what does this like language suggest?
That we're dealing with Nezek.
Yeah, we're dealing with a chiyuv Nezek, a chiyuv Mamon, if you will.
Yeah.
Right, a monetary obligation and not necessarily or a sicha obligation, or like something that might relate more directly to killing, right? So this will come very, very relevant in our next discussion. But I just want to show in contrast, right? The Ritva is picking up on just like the language of the Gemara, but in contrast, look at the Mechilta has this. This is the page beginning of page 5 has the exact same machloket, and look at the language it uses, right? In kofar shas lav natan pidyon nafsho shel mumat de Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Kiva pidyon nafsho shel nemit. Right, the language here is not about the damager and damagees, but about
the dead.
Right, exactly. The dead and the killer, in which case we're dealing with fully in Dine Ritzicha, which might then carry over into how we understand the dinim here. Right, obviously, the more we talk about this last week, I'll just bring it back in for a second. The more you think about that the Baal is actually responsible mita, right? He's actually responsible. He's chayav chiyuv mita de shemayim. He's chayav to actually die. The more the language of mumat and nemit makes a lot more sense, and the Ritva's language doesn't really fit well. The more you think that he's not so much responsible for his actual death, and kofar really is the chatchila, the option, and it's really a monetary obligation, right? The more then that would make sense that we'd use the language of nizak and mazik. Okay. All right, any questions so far? All right, so the Gemara says, right, this is the question we're dealing with this week, and actually we'll continue it the next Chabur also in a certain way. We'll see in a second. Okay, so the Gemara says as follows, right? The Gemara says, starts off as the beginning of the Gemara, apotropsin, right, Gemara and Kaman, Duff, Mem, and Aleph, Tarnabon, apotropsin, Mishalmin, Haliyah, Mishalmin, Kofar. Right, so the question is, an apotropos, what is he paying? So he doesn't pay Kofar, according to this Gemara. Why not? So he said, because Kofar is a Kapara. V'yad milav b'nei Kapara ninu, and he told him, don't pay Kapara. So the Gemara says, who exactly is this opinion? The Gemara suggests, maybe this is really a machloket between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Okay, that one holds that Kofra Kapara, right, the Rabbanan Savri Kofra Kamona, v'rishmo b'no shobri yochalan ben broka Savra Kofra Kapara. Right, so maybe there's this machloket whether or not Kofar is a Kapara or whether Kofar is Mamona. Right, and then the Gemara's conclusion is, Amar Papa, Lo de kuli alma kufra kaparahu. No, everyone agrees that kofar is kapara, right? So it seems like, and this gemara appears here, appears in Makot as well. There's like some version of machloket rishonim. It's not really clear if it really exists. This machloket, I'm not sure it does exist. But some contend that a bunch of people believe that no one thinks there really is a shita of kufra mamona. Right? Is there anybody who believes that opinion of kufra mamona? So it's not clear that anyone does believe that. That's like a separate discussion. Either way, it's very clear we paskin kufr kapara. Right? So I just quoted two sources. The Rambam says, I don't have apotropsin shalom et kofar. The question that Gemara is talking about, whether apotropsin pay kofar, he says, no, shal kofar kaparahu, because kofar is kapara. Likewise, the Ra'ah, quoting Shittin the Kuvetz, it says, Amar Papa, mistavra dehilcha dahachi, sounds like halacha, follows his opinion that kofar is kapara. Okay, so we strongly hold kufra kapara. The question, though, we're going to be dealing with is that really true? Right? I'm not denying this if we paskin halacha. The question is, what do we mean by kufra kapara? Because we'll see, it gets a little bit murky. There are a lot of deen that kind of imply a very monetary sense. Right? When we talk about kufra kapara, what does that imply to you?
Seems like it's a parallel, like almost system of carbono, which is like, more action-based, I guess. Like.
Right, so especially if you compare it to carbonot, right, so then, like, it's very much, like, non-monetary.
Yeah.
Right? If you have to be paying money, but it's a very much, like, it's not really a monetary payment. Okay, but we'll see, there's a lot of dinim that really suggests there may be more of a monetary thing happening here. Okay, so one example is this carbonot question. Okay, so the Gemara in Bava Kamma, right, the same daf a little bit later, has the following question is posed. Okay, Tanan. Chai ve'erchin mashkinotam, chai ve'chatarot v'ashamot in mashkinotam. So there's this general din about which korbanos are mashkin. Right, so what does that mean? To mashkin a korban?
Like someone won't bring the korban, so you have to like take something, like a collateral from them.
Right, so do you collect collaterals? The question is, for certain korbanot, right, do you take collateral? Does Beit Din like impose like a certain way of like taking a security, if you will, from their possession in order to guarantee that they will end up bringing the korban? Right. So I just quoted the Rambam in Masar Korbanot. He just like summarizes the dinim. Right. Some dinim kol chayv olos v'shlamim. So some korbanot like olos v'shlamim, which are not really kapara fully based, but mashkin otam. So Beit Din does come and collect a security. Afal pi she'imid kapar lo ad sheyirtzeh nemar ratzono kofin oto ad sheyomer rotzani. But chayv chatat v'ashamot, but chatat in asham. Ein mashkin otam huil v'hin me'okve kapara ein choshim lehem shema yivshu v'yishavu korbaneim. Right, but chatad and asham, so other korban which are more directly guilt related, right, having done a sin or sin offerings, as we might call them, those were not collecting mashkin because we're not worried that someone's not going to bring his chatat. Right, we believe that a person knows about what he did wrong and they're going to feel compelled enough on their own to bring the korban. And we don't need to force them ourselves by collecting a type of security. Okay, so the question the Gemara is dealing with then is, what about kofar? Right, kofar is a kapara, which seems to be then therefore linked to types of korbanot, right? Type of like chatat, right? You did a sin, you commit, you killed someone, or responsible for someone's death. So are we mamashkin for them or not? Right. So the Gemara has two possibilities, or two is split into three, right? The Gemara says as follows, my kevan de kaparahu, kechatat v'asham dami. So maybe because it's like a kapara, it's like a chatat v'asham, machmir chamir alei v'lo bai mishkune, and therefore he's going to bring it, because it's very chamor to him. O dilma kevan de lechavrehu, de bai mitvele, mamonahu v'lo lo gavohu, v'lo chamir alei v'bai mishkune. Or maybe, at the same time, maybe because he's giving his friend money, right? He's not giving it to God. He's giving money to his friend. Therefore, it might not be considered to be so chamor. It's not very stringent. It's not very important to him, and he's not going to bring it. And that's why we need to come and impose this type of added security. We kind of have to force him to do it, compel him by taking his other property so that he ends up paying the kofar. Inami, alternatively, another reason why he wouldn't be doing it, keba dehu lochata, mamonehu de'azik, maybe since he himself didn't actually cause any damage, lochamir milte aleihu by mashkone. Right, his property is the one that caused the damage, so he might not think it's so chamor what he did, and he's not going to feel compelled that he really sinned in any real way, and we're going to have to force him, so to speak, to do so, to actually get this kapara that he does indeed need. Okay, so how do you understand, the two sides of this machloket? Like, what's the debate here about?
Either he feels it's really on him, or he feels it's not on him.
Right, but so, I think, it's very much, the way you understand the Gemara reading, it's very much about, like, what he thinks. In some ways, right?
As opposed to,
it's how he, yeah, like.
As how, yeah, what we're saying.
No, right? No.
It's as much how he conceives
like,
it.
Like, we're psychologically reading him in order to determine whether, what he's going to do.
Right, exactly. We're trying to determine what his psychology is thinking about. Not necessarily what the deen is. We're not really determining whether or not the deen is like more chamor than mamon or gavor or not. We're really talking about his psychology. Right? Because otherwise, if you don't read it that way, then we could read the Gemara. If you don't think about it, it's his psychology. Then the first side of the Havamina, right? The one side of the question, right? The first side is that Kevin the Kaparahu, Kechasiv Ashem Dami, right? The first side sees it as it really is a korban, like Chatat and Asham. It's really like fully for Kapara. And that's why, just as like, those korbanot, you don't get, we're not mashkin, so to here we're not mashkin, we don't collect securities. Or, on the other side, right, the other side of the coin, to say, no, it's actually din in mamon, right, it's actually a monetary payment, it's not really like a full korban, and that's why he is chayav to pay. Do you guys see the difference between these two perspectives? Right, one perspective, the one that you guys both mentioned, the pshat sounds like more what the Gemara's doing, is we're trying to analyze his psychology, right? This doesn't necessarily bear any weight, then, on how we interpret the definition of what kofir really is. Is it like, in kapara, is it in mamon, is it like a korban, is it not? All we really care about is what he thinks. That's what we're talking about. If you don't take that route, though, then what you really think about is that the two sides of one of this coin really relate more to the nature of the korban, nature of the chiyuv kofar, is kofar like a chatat and rasham, like a korban, like a kapara, or is it more of a din mamon? Okay? Alright, so if you take the more psychological route, this really doesn't have any bearing on ratios. The problem is the following. Okay? So, the Ramban, right, he takes the approach, he thinks the paskins that you ain't a mashkinotan, you do not collect anything, so it's kind of like a regular, it's like a full korbanot. Right, he says in kofri shat alav, bavur hiota kofar, kaparak, inyana korbanot. It's fully like a korban, and just like a chatan asham, we can't force you to bring. Likewise, here we can't bring. To pay kofar. Right, so for the Ramban, it's very clear. It's like a kapara, nothing else. The problem is, what about the other shidot? Because the Ramban's kind of alone a little bit in his position. The Rambam, for instance, does paskin, right? He says, look at the last line, he says, v'afo pisha kofar kaparahu, even though kofar is a kapara, so he's very much in the kofar kapara side, however, mimashkinin et mishin et chayiv bekofar bal korcho. Yet we still are mimashkin. He paskins at the end of the day, we do force you to take it. We do force you to bring to pay the kofar. We will collect that security from your property in order to compel you, right, to pay the kofar. Okay, so how do you resolve these two things, right? So you could have suggested, right, by kofar kapara, that it's just about, right, you could have said that the reason that we are compelling you is based on psychological reasons, right? That the only reason you're not bringing it is because psychologically, like, you don't think it's that important, even though it really is that important. It really is like a chatat nashim, which psychologically, that's not what you believe, right? You think it's not as important as it is.
You're using that to explain the discrepancy between the Ramban and the Rambam?
Just explain the Rambam.
Oh, just explain
the Ramban makes sense.
Okay.
The Ramban fits.
Well, the Ramban doesn't make sense with that, really, though. Because then it still shouldn't say im, because it shouldn't be a matter of if, because you're going to do it no matter what, because...
Yeah, but you have a full choice. The point of Ramban is that you have im, it's like a complete choice.
Yeah, but usually when people are... I feel like in other instances, not that we can compare different instances in Torah, but when people, but like when things are done that people do, it usually doesn't say im, it's just is like written, and then we have to decide whether that's descriptive of what people are doing or whether it's a prescriptive like tzivui. But like if you're, once you're saying im already, I think it's bringing in a question of whether it's actually going to happen or not, which goes against what we were, how we were explaining the Gemara before.
I don't know if that's entirely true. I think im also comes cases, like you're saying im means like whether it's going to happen. I think im also happen, also has to do with like whether you're going to do it and kind of if you want to.
Okay. And you will, and
that's what I'm, that'd be the way Ramban's interpreting it. Im refers to like your volition, it's your choice. If you want to, bring kofar. If you don't bring kofar. It's up to you.
Yeah.
But I think that does jive with the word im throughout the Torah. It doesn't always mean, it does mean sometimes like when you want to.
No, when you want to, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you always want to. Right?
I mean, the Ramban will agree that you should want to, but it doesn't mean you have to want to.
Yeah.
That's what he'll just say. You should, obviously. Just as you should not, I don't know where else to say im, like you shouldn't kill someone.
It just seems like in the Gemara, we're not even raising the possibility that a person wouldn't grant. Like it's like, no, obviously they're going to do this.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't fit so well.
But, yeah, that's
I agree. There's a lot of discussion about Sermban, because it's really crazy in a sense. Like it's implying something like you have like that choice. There is a lot of discussion that doesn't fit within the Gemara. It's a good point within like the reading of the Gemara.
That's all I was.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Okay.
I'm focusing more on the Rambam. It's a good point.
Great.
The Rambam, though, right? Rambam says that you are mashkin, right? You are chayav the guy. You are coercing the guy to pay kofar, right? Even though it's a kapara, right? The question is why, right? So one solution could have been it's just because it's psychology. The person, even though it is very important and it is like a kapara, the person might not think so, right? We sound like Gemara, he might not think so, and therefore we're forcing him nonetheless. The problem with that is that the Magen Mishnah quotes the Rashba and thinks that the Rambam believes like the Rashba. So I quote the Rashba at the bottom. Rashba says as follows. He quotes Tosfot, and he says, V'nir midivrayim depshita de'ilu lo ratza l'shalim. If the guy doesn't want to pay, so both sides of the question, both sides agree, if the guy doesn't want to pay, beitin, Megabin Umashkinin Kishar Nizikin de Alma. Either way, everyone agrees, the Maskana of the Sugya on both sides of like the question of whether Mashkin or not, if the guy says no, I don't want to do it, then Beitin will come and do it nonetheless. Beitin will come and collect collect some type of mashkon in order to guarantee that the person will do it. Kishar Nizikin de Alma, just like every other Chiyuv Nizikin. Okay, so if the question is, if the Rambam, or let's say ask a question on the Rashba, if you will, if the Rambam and the Rashba believe that this is a chiyuv of kofar is kapara, so then how can he then say kishar nezikin d'alma?
Because it's a hybrid, as we were talking about last week, but you're not gonna.
Does that make sense, the question?
Yeah.
Wait, can you repeat who you're talking
about? What?
Who are you talking about just now?
Well, this is with the Rama within like the Magen Mishnah, but the Rashba explicitly.
He quotes the Rama.
The Rashba quotes like the quotes Tosfot, but everyone agrees that you pay that kofar is a chiyuv kapara. Right? Everyone agrees. Rama explicit about it that kofar is a chiyuv kapara, and yet despite the fact that kofar is a chiyuv kapara, we are in mashkin, we do collect because it's like shar nezikin, because it's like other nezikin. Right, so the question is, how can it be on the one hand the kofar is a kapara, and yet at the same time it's considered like shar nezikin, like other nezikin cases? Right, so
is
how
does
that?
Is there no aspect of kapara in like, I guess like what Leor said, like a hybrid, but like, was it never discussed like where like a knas for stealing or whatever is some sort of kapara as well? Is it never spoken about in those terms? Is it always just like, oh well, you did something wrong, like you just have to make it right, like, or is there any aspect of like atonement as well, like a kapara, like when you're doing that, when you're making things right?
There is an aspect, but usually it's both. Usually, like if you steal, right, so you're high, if you're like a ganav, right, so Adam come and say you stole, so you're high, you have to pay back both the karen, both what you stole, and kefel. And the kefel is a knas,
mm-hmm.
right, but neither of those are, like, there may be certain kapara aspects to them in theory, but they're not, but neither of them, but both really chiv mamon. if you're a gazlan, which is a slightly different type of stealer, mm-hmm. so you might be chayv a korban, maybe you're chayv chomesh, potentially, which is like a fifth. So chomesh might be a type of kapara payment, besides being knas. But definitely, but then the rules of knas would apply. You wouldn't have the rules of, we can't force you to bring chomesh, for instance. We're not mamashkin and chomesh. Okay, so how can you have both the concept of something being knas and at the same time being in the zikin? Right, so we got this hybrid question.
You just said knas and zikin.
How can something be on one hand kofar? How can kofar be a kapara and at the same time be nizikin, kishar nizikin?
Like what I was saying last week.
Right.
That also is kind of similar, very distinct though from what you were bringing in the name of, was it Rav Lichtenstein or was it the Rav?
It's both.
Okay, like building off each other.
Okay, so let's get to that. Let me point out that this problem appears like one other place, or a lot of other places, but I'll just point out one other place, which is important. We might talk about this next time, a little more direct, more full. But there's a Gemara in the same parak in Daf Mem Gimel, where the Gemara has this really interesting suggestion. Rabbah believes, okay, that Shor Shemit bin Horin Shelo B'Chavana, Pater Mikofer, right? So we talked about this a little earlier. So Rabbah has this opinion that Kofer, I said that everyone agrees that if a shor kills Shelo B'Chavana, he's chayv kofar. Rabbah disagrees. Rabbah actually thinks that if a shor kills Shelo B'Chavana, he is pater mikofar. Okay? That's Rabbah. You like the shor that kills him unintentionally, you're pater from kofar. And he proves it from a pasuk. Okay? It doesn't make a difference. Abaye asks the following question. Itve Abaye. If that's really true, so a hemi shorit ploni, or shor shel ploni, har yizem misham apiyatim. There's a Mishnah which says that if I admit in front of court that my shor killed, so I pay. I end up paying something. Okay? And this case would be true even if it was Shelo B'Chavana. Okay? So what exactly does... So Abaye says, my love to kofar. Doesn't this imply that you're paying kofar, this mishalim? Because you're clearly not paying skila, since you can't chayv skila if it's mishalim piasmo. So what does it mean mishalim piasmo? It sounds like you're paying kofar in this case. So the Rabbah says, lo, what are you paying? You're paying damim, right? You're not chai of kofar, and your animal's not chai of skila. You're chai to pay the monetary damages you've caused. Right? So your shore killed someone unintentionally. You're not chai of kofar, kornrao, you're not chai of skila, but, or your shore's not chai of skila. You're chai of damim, you're chai to pay the monetary damages. Now, I ask you, what are the monetary damages of a person you killed?
Are there monetary damages associated with
it? Well, but if you had to like give it a value of money, how much would it be worth?
Like whatever it says in the Torah about the base value? No.
I guess so, but I don't even need a number. And then it'd be the same thing though, right? As like the main nizak. Right.
Yeah.
When you pay kofar, if you pay kofar based on the main nizak, right, what does it mean to pay kofar based on the value of the main nizak? It means that you're paying kofar, right? The amount of money you're giving is the value of the person you killed.
Okay.
Right? The amount of value of the person you killed is the exact same thing as the amount of damages the shor caused.
Right.
And that's what Tosos's question is. My love kofar lo damim, v'im tomar. Right, kofar lamandar or kofar to mean nizak. Ma'ika ben damim le kofar. What is the difference between kofar and damim? Okay, so now if you believe though, right, does everyone get the question? Like, what's the difference pretty much between kofar and damim? If though you believe, right, that kofar is a type of kapara, and not that it's really a type of mammon, then this whole question is a little funny, because obviously there's a major difference. There's gonna be major differences between kapara and mammon, right? So Tosfos' answer tends to resolve around those type of differences. But the whole fact that he has this question kind of like begs this type of like thinking, like, is there really such a strong difference, such a clear divide between kofar and mammon? Right? Is kofar as kapara so distinct from chiyuvei mammon? Right? Everyone kind of get how this question is kind of motivated by this issue? Okay,
is
so...
Is that kind of like... another way of asking, like, is it possible when all of these impressions we're talking about like a kavara versus mamon, like they mean different things. Like they, like you think that when you're when you have like a certain scheme set forward, like, you know, one side is mamon, one side is kapara, like everyone's gonna be talking about those terms in the same way.
Yeah.
Is it possible that, like, the reason that they seem so intertwined is because not everyone's not really calling the same concept by the same term? Isn't that kind of another way of, like?
It could be, but it seems like in general we have this concept of kapara, which seems to be agreed upon by everyone, and we have this concept of mamon, which seems to be agreed by everyone.
Right, but like here.
I'm thinking, like, how else would you, like, how are they misinterpreting each other? Like, it seems a little bit difficult to understand, like, how they'd be interpreting the words differently.
I guess just because.
Like, I agree it's possible people can define things differently, and they can definitely come up. I just think it's a little harder here to really say that.
I guess my thought here is, like, well, we're talking about, like, a lot, essentially how these terms are bleeding in, these concepts are bleeding into each other.
Right.
And, like, certain definitions, like, one side or the other, like, where, like, almost force us to say, like, oh, well, like, kapara, like, mamon is a type of kapara, like, I guess, like, that was, it, like, didn't seem, like, so clear that, like, every single person was defining kapara in the same way, and mamon in the same way, just because the terms are bleeding into each other, but it's okay, never mind.
No, I think you're right. I think there is, like, this kind of bleeding in, but I think it needs, like, further, like, definition. I think it can be more clearer. This is where I brought in, like, the this is really the Rav's idea, and I think Rav Lichtenstein is the one that extended it to Kofar. But it kind of explains a bit, like, where exactly, like, it delineates, if you will, a little bit clearer, like, what exactly these definitions are. And I think that's true, like, that's exactly what Talmud Rishon are debating, is, like, they're interpreting the word Kofar as Knas, sorry, Kofar as Kapara, being different things. Right? So, I mentioned this last week, I'll just redo it. I'll just mention it again, because we're going to talk about this for the next, probably two couple of words, really. The rest of this one, and maybe the next one, partially, too. The Rav kind of differentiates that there are four different ways, in theory, you can be paying some type of debt. Okay? You can have a chiyuv, which is entirely kapara-based, all right? And you're paying, like, say, mita, or a korban. Okay? There's no monetary involvement. You did something wrong. You were mechalel Shabbos. You killed someone. Right? You're chayav something. It has nothing to do with money. No money is changing hands at any point. Right? You have a fourth possibility, like the extreme, where you have a case of chiyuv mamon be'alma. Right? It's a chiyuv mamon. It's like a baal chov. You have an entirely monetary obligation. I borrowed money from someone, right? There's no kapara. I'm doing anything wrong from borrowing money. Right? I'm not paying you back for borrowing money. Like, I obviously have only a monetary obligation. In the middle between these two things, right, you can have a chiyuv kapara, right? You can have a chiyuv kapara, which is paid through money. Right, so sometimes to get kapara for what I did wrong, I need to give money. So a good example might be, right, on Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, right, we talk about the three things, right, one with like zera, right, tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah, right? So tzedakah is clearly not paying a debt. I'm not paying a debt necessarily in that context. I'm clearly paying some type of, I'm performing tshuva. I'm doing some type of way of like atoning for my sins by paying tzedakah, right? If I'm a wealthy person and I feel bad about what I did, misleading people about potential damages of drugs or something, I can give a lot of money and hope that kind of atones for what I did wrong.
Tzedakah is in like a normal mamon category?
We talked about tzedakah before. I'm just using it like a framework. I think the actual din of tzedakah are more complicated. I agree. We talked about this before. We talk about tzedakah being maybe half. It's not really even like a choice. It's really I'm giving it. I have to give it. The more you think of tzedakah that I have to give it, the more it's like maybe it's just like a regular chiyuv mamon.
Mm-hmm.
The more you think it's like the more you think of the tzedakah as something like it's charity. I didn't have to give charity, but I chose to give charity. The more that like it's really an atonement or it's really just like a goodwill on my part.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I'm going to use tzedakah as like a quad, right, ma'avir drua gzera, if you will.
Okay, there's a third possibility in the middle, between these two possibilities, which is that you really chayiv chiyuv mamon, but you also get, so you get, but when you pay money, you get mamon plus kapara. Right, that somehow by giving your money obligation, you also get kapara through it. It's defined, though, as a chiyuv mamon. If you will, we can talk about, in some ways, the friendship between 2 and 3, is that this is a yoredei din, and this is a choshen mishpat din. Right? One of these laws are about isurim, or is about doing, correcting what I did wrong. It's something that the rabbi is directly involved in. And one is a, or the priest is very involved in, and the other one is a monetary obligation. Right? Something that the dayan is involved in, something that the lawyers are going to be involved in, the courts, right? And it happens to be that also by giving back, I also get some type of kapara. But that's like kind of like a side, that's like a, it's a, it's an extra benefit, if you will. It's an incident, it's partially incidental, but it may be part of the goal, but it doesn't define the way the money is actually worked transferring. Where the dinim that are irrelevant are choshen mishpat dinim, not your day dinim. Okay, so I showed, it's really based a lot on this Tosfot that differentiates between Truma and Hekdesh. Okay? Because Hekdesh, the Tosfot asks the following question: why is it that by Hekdesh, you can be kofar? Sorry, by Hekdesh, there is a possibility in some context to be mochel, Hekdesh, but you can't be mochel Truma. Right, why is that certain payments are different? What's the difference between Hekdesh and Truma? So, it's kind of running out of time, so I don't want to spend too much time like discussing the differences, but pretty much Tosfot's argument is that, and this is the way the Rav understands it, is that Truma is a type of Kapara Aydei Mamon, that paying Truma is a type of, it's not really a monetary giving, it's not really a din in Choshen Mishpat, it's entirely your Dei Din, I have to give you the money anyways, I have to give you the Truma anyways, I'm just giving sure that I have to, and that gives me kapara. While hekdesh is a din which is a monetary obligation that, as a consequence, I also get kapara for. Okay, everyone get kind of the differences. Okay, here's where it gets. This is like a good framework, kind of like remember this type of framework, especially 2 and 3. This is what we're talking about for kofar, because the question we'll be dealing with really is when we talk about kofar being a chiyuv kapara, right? Kofar kapara hi, right? Are we talking about 2 or are we talking about 3? Are we talking about it being a an obligation which is fully kapara, just happens to be given through the lens of money? Or is it really a din mamon that just happens to also get you kapara? Okay? Because we'll see that this really might be some of the differences between some of the Rishonim throughout the Sugya. Okay, so for instance, so one, how do we gauge this? So one way of gauging it might be whether or not you can be mochel this chiyuv. Because Tosfot in Ketubot, when referencing this difference between Truma and Hekdesh, suggests that the difference is whether you can be mochel. Right? So if you look at Tosfot in Ketubot, this is on page 4 or 6, it says, V'shomer d'shani shogig the Truma v'shum tashlumi d'day kapara v'lo mamona. Since Truma is a kapara and not mamon, v'imrapsa kohen limchol en yachol limchol. So a kohen cannot be mochel for Truma, but he can be mochel aval keren v'chomer shel Hekdesh, and therefore you can be mochel. Right? So the difference, the litmus test, if you will, that the Rav really points to in the way that that Tosfot seems to suggest between whether or not it's 2 or 3 is whether or not you can be mochel. Everyone with me so far? Right? If it's a kapara, then you can be mochel. Sorry, if it's a monetary obligation, you can be mochel. If it's a kapara, you cannot be mochel. Right, it's not. Nobody has the power to be mochel except for God. But God doesn't have mochel; it's really a tone, right? And but if it's a mamon obligation, the person who's owed the money can be mochel, and somehow you get the kapara through that mechila. Okay, that's kind of the limit test that seems to appear through Tosfot. Okay, so Tosfot with regard to kofar, did you guys see this Tosfot or the Shita Mikuetz that quotes the Tosfot Rina Parrot, who says something similar? Okay, so look at the Rina Parrot. They say something similar, right? So this is the same type of question. Like, what's the difference between...
So the question is, right, so being blessed to ask, there are similar questions, similar answers. The question asked here is, what is the difference, whether it's kufr kapara or kufr mamona? That's what he asked. What's a nafkamina? So he says, his first nafkamina is, nafkamina inyan imachlo ayorshi makofer, I kufr mamona, yishlomar rishayim chol, vi kapara lo mati machli. That if you hold that it's kapara, then you cannot be mochal, the yorshim cannot be mochal. If though, it's not kapara, but through the chiyuv mamon, then the yorshim can be mochal. Okay? Everyone get, right? So Tosfot seems to be arguing then, right? What side, how does Tosfot understand kofar? Right, since we passed in kofar kapara, so how does Tosfot seem to understand kofar? Is it number two or is it number three? Is kofar a... It's two, right? That's why you can't be mochal, right? According to this, based on this litmus test. The problem is, so that these things for your Tosfot is, we're going to spend time on the other answers Tosfot gives. So if you want Tosfot, this is the same Tosfot just above. Tosfot gives other answers to this question about damim versus kofar. He gives that answer of the mechila, but he gives other answers as well. So we're going to discuss whether those answers seem to suggest and conform with our view that's really talking about that kofar really is type 2, that kofar is really a dim and kapara entirely, or whether you don't have to believe that. We'll talk about that probably next time. I'll explain more when I get there. But either way, I want to show you that not everyone agrees with Tosfot. So for instance, the Emek Davar, the Netziv, and I thought later the Rabag said the same thing, and earlier, right, the Rabag says, in kofar yishat alav, im ratzu ha-yorshim im chol ha-kofar harshut bi-adam. Right, so with regard to kofar, the yorshim have the right to be mochal. Right, which implies what? If the yorshim can be mochal, then?
It's mamon.
Mamon, exactly, right? So if you believe this is really a litmus test, and you can contend it's maybe not the litmus test, right, maybe this isn't the really significant litmus test, but if it is, then it seems to be some type of machloket rishonim which one it falls into. Okay, according to Tosfot, those are being the parents, it's a kapara, and according to Rabag and the Netziv, it's really a chiyuv mamon. We're running out of time here, so I want to move on, but I mentioned that the Midrashim quotes that there's other shitot that disagree, even with regard to whether it's maybe a litmus test. Can we disagree about the case of Truma? Alright, we're going to move on. Alright, let's get to the Mimashim case. That's the case where that's what we kind of started with. Okay, so what about when it turns to this case of the mashkin, the case of whether or not Beitin can get a security? Okay, so with regard to korbanot, there Rashi, for instance, when it comes to korbanot, who can be collect korban? So Rashi, for instance, said that we're talking about a gizbar. The mashkin ato gizbar v'nichas b'tam v'notel b'akorchan. That it's the gizbar, right? The person in charge, the treasurer, if you will, of the Beit HaMikdash, he's the one who's the one collecting the korbanos, collecting the surety to make sure that you end up paying. Right? So the so to speak, the parallel, right, by kofar wouldn't be Beit in here, but it'd be the yorshim, right, the inheritors. So Tosfot discusses whether or not the kofar might be yorshim, and he's like, after him by lay, imichol and mashmo. So Tosfot asks, Tosfot says that the question is, the question, and then the two sides of the suffix is, can the Yorshe and Nizak be mashkin? Okay? The question is, and this, there are two issues that appear in the sugya, two different questions. The first one is, what about Beitin? Can Beitin be mashkin or not? Right? So everyone kind of reading into Tosfot, because Tosfot only mentions Yorshe and Nizak. So what does that imply about his understanding of Beitin? And therefore, yeah, what?
Sorry, which specific Tosfot are you
reading? This is on page 8.
On what?
Tosfot Chayav Kofar Mai. Right, Tosfot says Chayav Kofar Mai. What is the suffix, so to speak, when the Gemara asks about can you do a mashkin or not? So he says the Yorshe and Nizak Asnom Vayelay. He's asking about the Yorshe and Nizak, right? If you want, that's the parallel to the Gizbar. Right. So by. Right, for a gizbar, right, so by korbanot, right, who's collecting? Rashi said the gizbar is collecting. So by kofar, who's collecting? Right, the comparison to gizbar would be here, would be the yorshim.
Tosfot says that's what the question is. That's what the Gemara's question is. Can you worship it? What's unclear here is what about the Beit Din? Can the Beit Din collect or not? Right, do you guys get that's not the same thing? Then there's one thing whether or not, like, I owe you money. I owe the Yorshim money because I killed their father. So it's one thing if Yorshim can do so. What about Beit Din? Can Beit Din force me to give? Right, it's a different type of issue.
Well, are they forcing to give to them, or are they, like, forcing to give to the Yorshim?
Well, it's forcing to, if we coerce you to give, because we collect your property, we, like, force you by, like, taking some of your property, so that now you have to pay the money in the meantime. We take, like, a forcible mashgon. Like foreclosing a house if you want.
Well, I mean, if I think there was an answer to what I was asking, which wasn't the answer. Like, my. No, my question
was. Are you still bothered?
I mean, I'm still bothered by it, but, like, the answer that you gave is an answer that I think I just disagree with. Or don't understand. Like, when you foreclose a house, like, it's because the money's supposed to go to the bank. Like, when the Beit Din is taking your money, are they taking it for the
Yeah, they're taking, they're it, taking no, it to no, they're taking it for the Yorshim. No, for the Yorshim.
So then I guess, like, that I feel like it should, there should be some sort of way where we can just, like, absorb that into, like, well, the Yorshim.
Well, a question like this, I'll give you, like, an example. There's a question of whether or not Avid Inish Ledine, Avid Inish Dine Lenafshe. Can a person, if I'm owed money, can I on my own decide, like, single-handedly to, like, force you to give me the money? Right, like, I know Leora, like, borrowed $100 from me one day, and, like I just decided, like, you know what, like, I don't feel like waiting, I'm just going to, and she, the debt has, like, time has passed, I'm not going to bring her to court, I'm just going to go to her house, I'm just going to steal $100. And that's fair game, if you believe Avi Yishti Dilan Nafshe. Right, so in this context, is the question about whether the Yorshim can do that, but it's obvious that Beit Din has the power to do so. Right? Or can Beit Din not do so either? Right? What is the role of Beit Din here? Because obviously, in the case where I borrow money from Leora, right? So there's a big question whether or not it's fair for me to just take the $100 from her possession without, like, her agreeing. But everyone agrees I can go to Beit Din and, like, get Beit Din to force her to pay. Right? I can go to court. I can go to, you know, I can go to the police. Or court, really.
So the question is the physical transfer of money, not where the money's going yet.
Yeah, everyone agrees it's going to Yorshim. Yeah. So the question is, what is Beit Din's power here, right? So are we talking about Beit Din Mashkinin or not? So the Rashba says, right, he understands Tosfot, that, of course, Beit Din can, right? That's what we saw the same Rashba earlier. V'nir midivrei, it sounds like from Tosfot, the Pshita, the Ilu, lo ratzel l'shalem, Beit Din megabim mashkinin kishar nevitim da'alma. Either way, Beit Din can collect. Right? That's the Rashba's position, right? Just like every other form of chov. Right, every other chov I can collect. Right, and this is what the same Rashba we talked about earlier, where the Rashba seems to be implying that this is not just a type of kapara, but that it's also a type of nizikin. Right, if you want, Rashba seems to be following under option number 3. Right, is that clear? Right, because actually he's calling it a chov, kishar nizikin d'alma. Right, implies that it's not really like a. It's not really kapara in the same way, right? Because Beit Din has that power, right? Everyone clear on that? Okay, so Rashba's put it under number 3. Okay, so the Rashba thinks that with regard to Beit Din, that it's obvious that Beit Din could collect. Everyone thinks that so Rashba says yes. Okay, the Lecha Mishnah, right, a commentary on the Rambam, he says no, that really Beit Din is under the same question as Yorshim. Okay, that if there's a question about the Yorshim, whether the Yorshim can collect this surety, whether they can mashkin, those are the question about Beit Din. Okay, how to understand the Lecha Mishnah is a little bit more up to debate. I just want to show kind of like the range of possibilities. Okay, we're running out of time here, so I'm gonna think what's okay. So when we talk about the Lecha Mishnah, right? So Beit Din is like the same question for the Yorshim is for Beit Din. There are kind of like two ways to think about this. Like, what position, right? We just said that the Rashba, right, is clearly on the side of number 3, right? Because Rashba is saying it's like Shara Nizikin,
right? And that's why the rule is generally by other nezikin, Beit Din has the power to just do what it wants and kind of force you to pay back, force you to pay. And Rashba says that the same thing is true for Beit Din. But according to Lecha Mishnah, there's a suffix about whether or not we can force you to do so. Right? The Gemara has a suffix. So what does that imply about kapara? About whether or not kofar is kapara?
Maybe?
Maybe, yeah, exactly. No, exactly it. I think it's kind of go both ways.
Yeah.
Okay? So the Tozal Bein Tamim and Rabbeinu Tam, they say kind of similar to the Rashba. So it's similar to the Lecha Mishnah. And they say, part of the language, I underlined it, they say kishar chovot da'arma. It's like every other chov. Right? So they make it sound like it's like, that it really is like shar nevikin. And the question is, even for other nezikin, maybe it is that this is a little bit different because the guy feels compelled to give it anyway, because it's like because of the fact that there's some point there's a kapara attached to it, the main person is going to give it anyways. But either way, right, that's one possibility. But the other possibility would say that in Lecha Mishnah to say that no, in fact, it's not really like shar chovot, really it is fully kapara, and that's part of the question whether Beit Din can take it or not. Do you guys see a little bit how that's... We're going a little quicker. I feel bad that we're not. So, but you guys can see how it gets a little bit split up a little bit? Okay, either way, right, there's a little bit more ambiguity, my point is, in Lecha Mishnah. What's clear, though, is the position of the Me'iri. Because the Me'iri says as follows. Right, the Me'iri says, he poskins that you cannot, in mashkin, that Beit Din can in mashkin. He says, right, Mishin chayv kofar, right, only Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, Shein Bati Dinim Shibishar Ayarot Niskakin LeKapara. Because no other Beit Din can deal with Kapara. Right, so what does it sound like he's saying?
I mean, it sounds like he's saying that's probably in the Kapara camp, but yeah.
Yeah, so then why are you Mashkin? Why are we, if it's fully kapara, then why are we in mashkin?
Because it's this kapara mama that you should get. No?
Yeah, but it's kapara. But it's fully kapara, so then why?
Because he's not necessarily conscious of the
kapara,
it seems like. That's what seems to be going on here, no?
Well, it seems a little bit unclear. Why is it, if it's kapara, then why
are
you mashkin? That's what I'm asking you.
Because Elishu Mamon Kavero called the Barbeina.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's calling it kapara.
He's calling it kapara because we know it's kapara. I feel like this is saying that this is different than the approach that we were taking before with the kapara, right? Which was like, if he thinks it's kapara, he's going to end up doing it. So we don't need to make him, we don't need to take a mashka from him. Here we're saying that, no, he's not going to want to do this because he doesn't care because he's just like, it's a mamon payment and like that's not such a big deal to him. But it's a big deal to us that he gets kapara. So we're going to enforce it on him.
Right, okay, great. No, exactly. I think that's right. But then I think the point of the Me'iri is that we are forcing him, but not because it's achiz mamon. It's not, right? If you want to word this differently, think about this a little bit differently. Between what's the difference between 2 and 3? Like another way of thinking about it. According to sort of number 3, the yorshim or the mate deserves money, right? They're owed money, right? There's a debt. The debt exists, right? And therefore, at some point, we have to deal with the fact that you have to give them the money no matter what you do, right? And the more you think of number 2, though, there's no debt that exists, right?
Are you saying the Erie fits in number 2, though?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's called Mamon Chavero, so wouldn't that...
That's what he thinks.
No, but I think that he's saying that is what the case is, but it also serves as kapara. Like, I think this is...
Why is he adding it? It's kakim kapara, and therefore only Bati Din Yerushalayim can collect it.
Because it has a kapara element for him, but it's also serving the purpose of returning the
money. Oh, you're saying it's number 3, but because they have this, like, kapara.
Because it has kapara element, and we want to get the kapara, we're going to enforce it. That's what it seems like to me.
Okay. I think it's definitely possible. I think it's possible. I think what Miri is trying to suggest is that the reason we're high of you is not because there's a debt, not because you're paying him back, but because we think you need to get kapara. Right? There's this question. Look at the original scene, Ramban and the Bein Bechai. We'll end with this a bit. That the Ramban, right? We said this earlier. The Ramban is very clear that this is completely kapara, right? So much so that we can't even compel you to do anything. It's completely up to you. According to the Bein Bechai, though, he's pretty similar. That it's also kapara. Whenever we can't compel you, you still have to give it. There's some type of moral obligation on your hand that you have to do something. And I think Meir is kind of sitting in that same camp. It's that we're forcing you, not because there's a debt that exists. The debt doesn't exist. But Meir is saying that, nonetheless, because we are going to force you to get kapara. And that's why he quotes the Rosi on his thing. In his thing. If you look at the full, I didn't quote the full thing, but he quotes it earlier. Feel free to disagree. Okay, that makes sense? Okay, we're going to end with that. I think, here's what we're going to do for the next time. Well, 2 points. One is there's a list, effectively, of potential nafka minas, right? Potential cases for where something might be defined as kapara and something might be defined as mamma. So I want to kind of go through them, but I want to do one thing methodological, which is that we kind of I want you to think of two planes. One is, what exactly am I suggesting? What exactly is this nafka mina suggesting? How would each side fit in? But then at the same time, you have to think about, is it really true? Is this really a good nafka mina? Right? What about this case makes it a good nafka mina or makes it a bad nafka mina? Do the sides really, really split? Does that make sense? You can suggest a nafka mina between Tosfot and Ramban, but it might actually not be, that might not be what they're actually arguing about. All right, we'll be more explicit about it next time, as we think about it. The other point is more are we having Kabbalah next week? And if yes, do you want to do it on Pesach stuff, or do you want to do it on more Kofar stuff?
I can't do next week. It's just too busy.
Okay. We also do a different
because
time.
Because I'm losing out on Sunday,
right. I can also do a completely different time. I can do any one day, honestly, because I'm pretty free.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I understand you've worked. I understand the work. I've been a student too.
What?
What
did you
say? I've been a student
too.
Really?
Yeah. That's a lot of
I never stopped you from going to my uni. I never stopped you. You have a major.